I'm expecting.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast, the show where we dive into the conversations that matter to leaders, change makers, and all of us trying to navigate the fast-paced world we live in without losing ourselves along the way. I'm your host, Nikki Robertson, and today we're exploring something that is often overlooked in the workplace, but absolutely essential to our success, and that is self-care in the corporate context. Now, we all know the grind, the endless meetings, the high-stakes deadlines, the pressure to always be on. But what happens when that pressure starts to filter into our everyday lives? Can we still show up as our best selves, lead with purpose, and create impactful change without burning out? Today's guest is no stranger to balancing the demands of leadership with the need to nurture her own well-being. I'm thrilled to be joined by Sadika Fakir, the Digital Head of Marketing and Media at Absa Group. Sadika is here to talk about how she embraces the challenge of her career, but also makes space for self-care in a high-performance corporate environment. Sadika, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Nikki. It's an absolute pleasure and honor to be a part of this.
So let's begin with who you are. For those who don't know, who is Sadika and how did you find yourself doing what you're doing at this point in your life?
It's such an interesting, reflective question. So thank you so much for that. You often have to look back because ultimately your future always is determined by your past and your past experience. And I stand on the shoulders of many greats that have gotten me this far. So if I look at my life, I'm one of those matriculants or grade 12ers that matriculated in Y2K, you know, the 2000s. So in 2000, I got my matric and then proceeded to really living a life of thinking that the world was big and that I could achieve anything. And of course, circumstances happen. What you perceive to be a smooth running path or life sometimes doesn't always turn out. And when life throws you those curveballs, you must make a plan. It was always my aspiration to be an entrepreneur. And in fact, I wanted to go and become a chef. So food, I've always said, is my past, present and future. But I've always been passionate about the advertising and the communication sphere. In fact, one of my grade 10 teachers or standard 8 teachers at that point said to me, you know, Sadika, your future, because you are a natural communicator, take it as a blessing, hone in on those communication skills and focus on marketing and advertising, that there could be something there for you. And I'll always remember her for the rest of my life because I took that advice and I really focused on one big key skill, which we find today in corporate South Africa or Africa or the global field, that communication skills are imperative. Presentation skills, personal branding, how you show up. And so funny that more than 20 years ago, this English teacher actually picked that up as a key skill. So all of those are the shoulders I stand on. I proceeded post-matric to try to go to university. And unfortunately, we couldn't afford me continuing going to university. So I opted for distance learning. So majority of my qualifications sit in via distance learning, where I could work, make money at the same time and afford my education and afford my life. So I also opened up, I lived in the South Coast during that time, and South Coast meaning Scottsboro, Park Rennie, so deep South Coast, you know, past Durban, past Toti, and it was a small little a sugarcane village, a little, almost an aging village. You go there to retire. It was pretty slow. And I opened up and I found a gap for the South Coast's first modeling agency, which was a gap in the market, because if you have to look at many of the models that have made it on the scene, they actually come from small towns and are actually unfounded by model scouts. So in my sideline, I'm actually a modeling scout, and I wanted to take this further. Of course, circumstances again didn't permit me to doing that. And during that time, my father passed away, and he was a critical component of driving that entrepreneurial skill, because he was an entrepreneur himself. He himself found a gap in the market and was the South Coast only registered accountant at that point, and he serviced all of the small businesses in that area. And it again made me so passionate about small businesses in South Africa and supporting local and supporting small businesses. So it's ingrained in, I believe, my genetics to support small businesses and one day to become an entrepreneur. Then, long story short, I found myself in Durban. Dad had passed away. And you get under pressure at this point to go, okay, dad's not ba here to, as background. You get pressure from the family to go, are you going to finish studying? Are you going to take things seriously? And Sadika being Sadika said, you've taken me becoming a professional chef away, because there were huge comments. And you can understand, coming from an Indian community where law, becoming a teacher, medicine, or accounting or business science are the appropriate qualifications at that point. Selling, marketing, or advertising was not appreciated in the family at that point. Lo and behold, I had big aspirations as I started studying the industry to work for the best. And who was the best? The best, again, I go, the best of the best convinces a stubborn Indian uncle, i.e., my father, to believe that he could beat the Benz and actually afford a BMW. We don't come from the best of backgrounds, but this man believed that he was one day going to have his dream BMW and he was going to beat the Benz. He believed it emotionally. He believed it. Physically, he believed it from all of the attributes that BMW threw at him. And there was one agency that was behind this, and that was TBWA Huntley Scarres and TBWA Global. And I said to myself, Sadika, come hell or high water, you go for this agency because they understand brands, they understand marketing, and they understand your passion point, which is advertising. And I contacted TBWA. I was a bit of a harasser and a stalker. And I'm pretty certain that if the previous business development director and strategic director hear this, they will laugh because I stalked them. They afforded me a meeting. I took a portfolio of all of the little brands or the little initiatives I was starting to do in a little flippy folder, you know, those plastic flippy folders, because we didn't have PDFs at that point. And I was scared that they wouldn't put in a floppy disk into their systems and that kind of thing. So I presented my portfolio, and they afforded me the opportunity to come through to TBWA to work for free. And I think those were the best months of my life, because there was nothing to gain, but everything to gain. Of course, I didn't have a happy Indian mother at that point. What do you mean work for free? I was slated. I was slated by everyone, and I said, I'm going to follow this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to put all my heart and soul into this. And 3 months after the probation or the free work, I was offered a full-time position as a research analyst. And it was the most humbling experience, where I started at the baseline of customer by understanding the in-depthness of a customer. What drives them? Why would they associate with brands? And long story short, again, moved from Durban, aspired to move to Johannesburg, because the industry in Durban is quite flatline. There are a couple of corporates in South Africa, in KwaZulu-Natal, and the rest and majority of the industry sit in Johannesburg. So we did what I call the great Indian migration, not on a ship, but via the M3 all the way to Johannesburg to start a life out here. I was blessed enough to be given a little bit of an internship contract position just to start myself off again. And I was then called by TBWA Johannesburg to come through to work in for them as well. I had a couple of gigs before that. And again, what I learned is, as you are younger, you're quite immature, and you'll jump for like 50 rand, or you'll jump for a title. And perhaps it was good and perhaps it was bad. I did build up a little bit of a jumping a reputation. But again, I got to experience multiple categories on the agency side to land up one day at my last agency gig, becoming a business unit director or a business unit lead, leading up global pitches for the last agency before I was headhunted into corporate South Africa. And note, never say never, because I said to myself, I will never get into corporate South Africa. Love agency life, love media, love digital. And I said, it will never be a bank. That is the one big lesson I've learned.
That's how it
And
goes.
that's how it goes, Nikki. And that's how it goes. For half of my career, I've been on the agency side, and on the other half of my career, on corporate South Africa side, representing media and digital in those roles, from Nedbank into FNB into Tiger Brands, and now at Absa, where I'm the executive for digital marketing and media for the group, including our APSA regional operations, which are our rest of Africa markets and our international markets, including South Africa, of course. And outside of which, that's the corporate gig. Remember, I said food was my present, my past, and my future, along with my husband, Hemant, who is my business partner, my best friend, and a hubby. We pushed forward on the food because he's as passionate about food. I've been blessed enough to have a TV show on food with him, What's Cooking with the Fakirs. We've continued to produce content this year, not as much as the previous years, but we continue to still forge ahead with our food passion whilst also balancing our corporate lives and whilst Hemant also manages his own business. And that's where I am.
That is quite an insane story. So it sounds to me the through line from when you were very young is you've always had a, you knew where you were going and nothing was going to get in your way. Is that a family trait or is it something quite unique to you?
I do believe it's a family trait, and I saw these characteristics in my mother and my father. My mother was a very resilient, high passionate woman. She scared me on the best of levels. Let me just put it out there. Hashtag mom issues. But my dad, who came from nothing, fell in love with my mom, who came from quite a bit. So there was two poles of poles apart, and he needed to get up there. So we saw an extra driven individual to say, "I can take care of you. I can take care of my family." So I do believe it comes from the family that I represent.
It's such a strength when you've got, that kind of determination behind you because we're going off a bit top, a bit of off topic right now, but yeah, I really believe that if you nurture your kids to never give up,
Yes.
to earn the prize and find a way, be bold, it pays dividends. It's such a blessing.
I absolutely agree. I've got a 15-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. My 15-year-old son was diagnosed with a cognitive issue and epilepsy, so he's very special needs. And then my 7-year-old is going on to 21 because she firmly believes she can do anything. And who are we to say it? I always go, that's God's seat, not mine to make the judgment. And if she wants to be an international ballerina, a modern dancer, and a YouTube content creator, then so be it. And if my son wants to be a car designer, then so be it. Because it may not morph as exactly as that, but if they have that passion point, that's the core, what is that passion point you can commercialize? And that's what I've learned in my journey.
That is so powerful. You mentioned that, if you aren't a doctor, a lawyer, or a teacher, then you didn't have a career worth talking about. And it's for many of us, that's how we grew up.
Absolutely. I always say I'm not competing with anyone. There is enough sunshine, there is enough space for all of us to be lit up. My biggest competitor and my biggest enemy is myself. So I've got to always be conscious about what am I saying to myself? What am I doing to myself?
Exactly. And that's really what I want to talk about today because, and it's about men as well, but it's a lot of this, what we're going to chat about is about women. You have fought your way to the top. You have overcome, I can imagine, massive pushback at times, but keep reaching pinnacles. And what I want to talk about today is how do you balance your health, your well-being with your professional success? So how has your work-life balance evolved over time as you've gone through or down your career path.
Very interesting question. And I think balance is a very specific word and can be defined. And the ratios of balance are specific to an individual, their path, their purpose, and their plan. And that's something that I've learned because my work-life balance is fundamentally different to my husband's, as with my colleagues, as with my friends, as with other family members. But everyone is busy. And who am I to judge? My level of busyness could be exceptionally busy because I handled multiple projects, but somebody could be deeming themselves as exceptionally busy and exceptionally stressed, but doing half of my workload, each to their own. And that's the first thing I had to realize is Sadhika, what's going to suit you from a work-life balance perspective? The first thing, and I'll give you a couple of pointers, Nikki, and I hope they will help. The first thing is that I'm blessed with a husband and a partner that understands my times. And my workload. We in some cases can work anything from 18 to 22-hour days. We work through weekends as well because of in some cases we may have an experience or an event that we need to cover from a media or a digital perspective. In fact, just this weekend, over this weekend we sponsored the Tyler concert through Cape Town and Pretoria, and we had to We had to ensure that we had enough support personally because you're working through the weekend to cater this. Now, the first thing is you need a support structure, and that's why I'm saying I've been blessed with a partner. I always go, ladies, if he is not, or he or she, it depends on your preference, is not going to support you through the journey, then maybe you just need to wait it out a little bit. I was single for a long period of time, till I found my partner. And funny enough, I met him on the internet in a chat room, and we're still together, and he wasn't slimy. It's quite funny. You can meet love on Tinder and in chat rooms. So that's the first thing. Your support structure is critical. The second aspect is, I think there's a perception we must debunk. Oh, work-life balance means at 5 o'clock, I'm going to switch off. Then from 5 to 6, I'm going to cook dinner. From 7 to 8, I'm going to do story time with the kids, and. Unfortunately, it works for some people. It didn't work for me, Nikki. And I'm going to play open cards and put things on the table because we're having a very frank and open conversation. I'm switching off my laptop at 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning. So what we've developed between him and myself are micro moments. And micro moments, meaning we'll spend 5 minutes before the kids go to sleep praying together, because that's a family time. We travel together in one vehicle intentionally, because everyone says, "But Sadika, why don't you drive all the time?" I said, "That time, the four of us are traveling together. That's family time, and that's 30 minutes. That's a lot of time." Because I get excited for 5 minutes, for a loo break or whatever. So that's 30 minutes of family time in the morning where we are praying together, we're laughing, we're listening to a track, and we're planning our day. What are you planning for today? So that is what I call a micro moment. Marriage obviously needs a lot of time. And now we dedicate times during the weekends that if we have stipulated it's dinner, evening, and date night, then we've done it. But sometimes you can't do it, so you've got to find those micro moments. And then the third aspect is a level of honesty with oneself. Because I come through, I unfortunately, if you look, fortunately and unfortunately, if you look at my Enneagram, I'm a type one, so it means a strict perfectionist, which means consistency is critical for me. I need to plan, and I almost offend myself when perfection doesn't arise, which is probably a bad trait. You need to understand that things are not going to go right, and if I'm not feeling well, I've got to be honest with myself and step away. In some cases, if I have a migraine, I'll probably manage it there. But in some cases, if I'm not even feeling myself, I may start work late. My perception and the way I lead teams and the way and the organization I'm currently with is about output, not time. So it's not when you knock off. It's if you have stipulated that you will deliver something on X date, then deliver it on X date. If you needed to go to gym in the morning, then go to gym in the morning. So, work with organizations and work with people and work with leaders that are agile and that appreciate one, hybrid working,
Absolutely.
And two, appreciate that they are involved in an output and not timing. And those are my three things of how I manage it.
Yeah, no, it's critical. So let's go back to honesty with self. And I think this is a theme that I'd like to just dig into a little bit more, because I work with people all the time in executive healthcare that are burnt out,
Yes.
have terrible imposter syndrome, that don't know when to stop, they just can't manage themselves, but they're not honest with themselves about when they need that downtime. They're almost always tuning into other people and what they believe other people think of them, what other
Correct.
people need. How do you suggest, you've been doing this for a long time, if you had a teammate, a team member who you just knew was just not coping and was just not being honest with themselves, how would you tackle that?
So I am not perfect in any way. Let me start with me, because we're having an open conversation. I sometimes doubt my capability. And I think we are human. And I always go, there's imperfection in humanity. I sometimes, my goodness, is the recommendation good enough? Am I going to really succeed? Are we going to be able to pull this thing off in the short space of time that we have, for example? The first thing, and I've noticed, worked with many. On the Asian side, I've mentored many, and I work with colleagues who experience one, burnout, two, the imposter syndrome. The first thing I always go is, who am I? And it's such an important question. Even if the listeners were to write something on paper, I am, and what do you stand for? What are the values you stand for? Who are you as an individual? And I always like reflecting on this, and I say it's a little paper exercise. I love paper. So you do an exercise like this and sign off on who I am. And you'd almost stick it up in front of yourself until it's embedded or on a little sticky, because the first thing it starts with, who am I? Then the second thing that I've dealt with is, how are you? Because you know, everyone gets around that. I'm fine, thanks. How are you? And it's a South African thing. How are you feeling today? Is a very important question. What would make you feel better today? What made you feel good today? And those are the kind of conversation starters I start out with. I also go from a leadership perspective. I meet my team members or my colleagues where they want to meet me to have these conversations. I think every leader has a different leadership style, payload, but I change my leadership style by individual, or the way I work with my peers or partners by individual. In some cases, they may be open enough to have the conversation, and you've got to dial up on energy here. You've got to dial up on what you're feeling. Some people call it intuition. Some people call it the universe. Some people say it's the Holy Spirit. You've got to dial up on how you feel around the individual. And we find that sometimes we're too clinical and we are thinking too much in the human as opposed to being led. What are you feeling in this circumstance? I'm feeling this person's on edge. So can I ask the direct question? So it's an open and candid discussion and question. And then the great thing is that working with organizations that support mental wellness and physical wellness, like an APSA, have access to Lyra. It used to be called ICAS. And each colleague gets access to a clinical or trained psychologist if they're feeling burnt out. So they don't necessarily have to chat to me. They can subscribe to Lyra and have this one-on-one conversation. Because you know the biggest thing? You sometimes don't want to speak to your superiors because you feel that they will think ill of you, that you're not managing or coping. So, in some circumstances, I always stress to the listeners, have your trust circle, one that you don't feel judged with. And it may be, in some circumstances, your mother. It may be your sister. It may be your best friend. In fact, it may be your pastor. It may be a spiritual leader. Then there is that circle of professional help. And that is where you are trusting that that circle of trust will guide you in that if they can't give you the advice, I'm a firm believer of seeking professional help if need be, or spiritual help if need be. Because sometimes the emotions are bubbling up so much that even a friend or a partner can get overwhelmed with it, and you almost suck them into this portal of negativity. And in some cases, it can get serious because burnout can lead to, obviously, it leads to clinical depression, and clinical depression can lead to very, very toxic traits like suicide or attempted suicide, which freaks me out beyond measure. So yes, I'll recap. It's one, understanding who you are as an individual. If you are not acting to accordingly to what you signed as an individual, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, these are my plans for life, then you are not being true to yourself. Look at yourself in the mirror. The second is your support circle, and there is nothing wrong with seeking professional help at all, or spiritual help. And the third thing is that I also go, it's a write and release that I've done numerous times. When my dad passed away, I was lost. And I put on a large amount of weight. We spoke about that, and we'll speak about that wellness there. I really wasn't taking care of myself, and I had a very toxic partner at that point, who was in the form of a boyfriend, and just there was toxicity all around me. I did the write and release exercise, and I wrote how I was feeling, because sometimes we are very good as women, pack it in the little shoebox and put it on top of the cupboard and forget. So this is the time of the year. This is the time of the year. Pour yourself a cup of coffee or a glass of champagne or wine, whatever is your vice or your delight. Get that exam pad and write. Why am I feeling this way, and how am I feeling? And I always almost make it a ceremony out of it, that after I write, I release, and you burn. And there's a level of honesty where you realize there is a problem and you need to take it to the next level. Or second, I feel actually lighter. All I did need to do was release something that was on my mind that I was perhaps overreacting about.
Yeah, it's so powerful, that exercise. I do it religiously.
I'm so glad. It is exceptionally powerful. We actually don't realize the power of our heart and coming out on hand on paper. It is exceptionally powerful.
It is. And if you're going to burn it, you can name names and you can get really in the weeds with this thing because no one's going to see it. But it is so, so important.
No one's going to see it.
Exactly. And the reason it works, because there's a part of your brain and you can't type this. So it doesn't work if you type it up on your computer and then delete it. When we write, there's a part of our brain that connects with our hands that
Yes.
elicits emotion more than it does if we are typing on a machine, which we're emotionally disconnected from.
I love it. This is why we were brought together, Nikki. It's the same. We're on the same page here. I find that I can lie to myself if I type out a note, and because it's tech and I can delete it. And when coaching a couple of individuals, especially ladies, when doing it, and when I myself do it, let those tears come onto that paper. You know, just cry it out, because we are so good at suppression of emotions, and we know, and you being a trained professional in this, when you suppress emotions, it lands up impacting you physically. Whether, and in my case, it impacted me with obesity.
Very common. What we suppress will persist, and it will come out in places we least want it to. It is
Of
so.
course.
It's really. It's real. It's absolutely real. And
It is real.
I love what you said about letting those tears land on the page, and then hand it over
That's
and,
it.
release. And that is it is really it's free therapy, and you're just doing it yourself.
It is free. And that's it. I challenge all the listeners, Nikki. I think we both need to challenge the listeners.
I agree.
Go and do it. Go and do it this weekend.
Yeah.
Give yourself the opportunity to spend that hour with yourself, because also women are, you get different spectrums of women. Some are so self-absorbed that they hide their problems through the way they dress or the way they portray almost a fictitious or chameleon life on social media. Then you get the women who just absolutely suppress and say everything's okay and it's not. So we challenge everyone to actually go and look in the mirror now and write that letter to yourself.
Yep, everyone's got something to release. So I agree. I'm challenging, and I'd like to know in the comments and the feedback, and you can send me an email. What are you just you don't tell what the details are, but just let us know that you've done this and how you're feeling, because it would really know to good to know that it's engaging with this incredibly powerful technique.
That's it.
Yeah. So why on the subject of women and imposter syndrome, why do you think it's more common amongst women than men, or is it pretty equally balanced in your thoughts?
In my thoughts, I see it more in women. And again, we're going to play open cards here, right? So you may get some comments on this. The first thing is, of course, let's look at the way we were brought up. Dad or the male always led. And was the provider, and mom was the caregiver. I was blessed that it's so funny. My parents were co-entrepreneurs. So it landed up different that I have never felt undermined or demeaned by men. I see myself on the same level, and I haven't felt it. In some cases, yes, you'll find innuendos, or you'll find a sleaze bag and a scumbag, right? You're gonna find that in this
Of
industry.
course.
But I didn't. But I'm just looking at perhaps women that are suffering from imposter syndrome. Firstly, it is probably pertaining to a dad-mom issue, that mom wasn't put on an equal playing ground as dad. And that's the first thing of why I think imposter syndrome happens, especially in women. The second thing is because it's almost it's classical conditioning, right? That women were meant to be at home, and dad or men were meant to go and provide. It has fundamentally shifted now because in some circumstances in South Africa, there's more women economic empowerment. Women are getting jobs before their husbands. In fact, our roles reversed with Hemant and myself because he opened up the business, and because nothing was opening up for him in corporate, being an Indian male, and at that stage he was 30 plus. So nothing was opening. So we took a role reversal, and he supported it completely. And again, I give accolade again to partners who support their wives or or women to just grow out there. So there was no inhibition there. The second thing, and I'm going to be very candid. There is pusher down syndrome, as my line manager calls it. It's and I also refer to it as crab syndrome in woman. Why don't we want to see her grow? There's such jealousy in woman, and I am noticing this. It has been so hurtful this year that I have noticed more women bringing down women, whether it's social media, whether it's in the corporate field. I myself have experienced it. And let me put something even further. I'm noticing more Indian women in my circle bringing me down than any other race. I've got it's almost racism imposter syndrome that I'm experiencing right now. Lead females who are Indian are actually trying to bring me down, rumor mongering, gossiping. And it's an increasing toxicity I'm noticing in women's circles. Let's be told, I've actually cut out quite a few people, and leading to imposter syndrome, you've got to have a deep dive. Are those your friends or are those your wine buddies?
Right.
And should you be opening up to everyone? And my ardent belief is, please don't trust everyone with every piece of information. You've got to keep something to yourself. You don't speak about your next move until it's done. You don't play that chess piece until it is done, confirmed, signed, and on LinkedIn. All right. You don't confirm that business deal. There is I almost call it a spirit of jealousy going around women's circles right now. And we've got to keep those females, and I doubt anyone can count more than five on their hand, that are they true, true, true people. They're people
Yeah.
who will be with them in the good times and the bad times. So I also believe imposter syndrome is growing because, and I laugh at it, and forgive me for being judgy here. Those long tables on a Saturday having brunch and everyone dressed to the nines, and you can see these ladies eyeing each other out, and it's quite weird. I'm sitting in my little corner here, and you can see it's fake. It's just for the gram. And I think imposter syndrome can be curbed if you make a decision on who is your trust circle and who are you going to trust with that level of information, and cut people out if they're toxic. If they've made you feel terrible, cut them out. There is nothing wrong with cutting people out. I myself have burnt many bridges, even with senior leaders in the industry, because their psyche, their toxicity did not align to where I was going and who I am as an individual, and being God-fearing as well.
Yeah, I think that's such an important message. And we see it with our kids. You know, we see it in high school. We see it in their social circle. We want to
Yes.
be accepted by everybody and loved by everybody. And I had this conversation with my daughter the other day. It's like, Liv, your circle is probably only five kids. Is that probably only ever will be five people at a time where you can just be yourself with and not second guess yourself? Everybody else, you need to be discreet with. Otherwise, you're going to be disappointed. But it doesn't change.
Correct.
You know, you can't be everything to everybody. It's not possible. And if you are, then you're also not
No.
being true to yourself. And it's a harsh way to call.
It's a harsh one, but I believe we needed to speak about it today because someone here listening to this needed to hear it and needs to make some tough decisions, I feel.
Yeah, the people you bring to your heart need to be quality people, you know. Whose voice is
Correct.
that in your head? So yeah, I can resonate exactly with what you're saying, and I love that. You know, you're so honest and open about what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and we have to have these hard conversations because somebody is listening and somebody is suffering and somebody is going on battling exactly with this and trying to be all things to all people. But as you were talking, what came to mind was, what are the stories you believed as a child that determined your self-esteem? So you mentioned in the beginning your mom and our parents. We do it to our children. There's no perfect parents, but we say things to our kids that become their reality, and it
Yes.
almost informs who they become as adults. And I've come to these realizations much later on in life. It's like,
Yeah.
that's not my conversation. That was my father's voice saying that. It's not my
Correct.
life.
Correct.
You know, when you're journaling and writing down these write and release journals, is to who put those stories in your head, and are they true and useful for you today?
So profound. I do, and I still, those demons sometimes come out of the closet, right? And it's daily that you need to go,
Ah.
uh-uh, no time for this now. It's not my voice. So I'll give you some of the harsh ones, and I think I have to be again very honest and very open and very candid with you. Yes, I had issues with my mom, and I had issues with my sisters. I don't think I was liked at all. Things that you weren't planned for, which means I was a mistake. So that I think that's where it started. You're not welcome. Then I was born a big baby, so I believe a fetus can hear, right? So, and having spoken to doctors, they said a fetus was probably trying to protect itself when it heard that, because it was said outside of womb. And I was born a very big baby. So I was born a chubby baby. And that kind of makes sense because you would cushion yourself and you would protect yourself with fat. Then, of course, I was born a big baby and I was teased forever. I was put onto way less at around 3 to 4 because fat equals stupid and ugly. So I was the youngest member on the South Coast on way less. I either looked forward or not looked forward to Tuesdays at the local Hindu temple where we went in for weigh-ins and we got ribbons on that card because our food was controlled. It was all those way less products. Hell, I'd be a content creator and an influencer now for way less. I hated food. I loved food and I hated it. And I had a passion for food growing up, and all I wanted to be was a chef. And then that's the next one that came in. Oh, you want to be a fat chef? And in Indian customs, there was always the Indian auntie in a sari that cooked at Indian weddings, right? It was never catered, it was community. And it always happened to be that the Indian auntie was a fat auntie, okay? And I got the comment, oh, you're going to be that fat Indian wedding cook. You'll amount to nothing. So I got told that. Then it continued the story of then I decided, okay, I'm not going to do my chef course. It's fine. I won't follow culinary arts. I'll do marketing. I'll do a BCom in marketing. Oh, look at you. You did the stupid girls BCom. Because I guess stupid, fat, and ugly, that's what you're going to be. And I shouldn't try. And then I shouldn't try to get into corporate because, of course, being fat, ugly, and stupid, I'd be underpaid and never accepted by corporate. And there's no future or money in food. I should rather just think about, maybe accounting, go back of office, keep it demure, keep it cutesy, That's it. And then, of course, the thing that always lingered is fat equals ugly and stupid and underpaid and poor. And that rung with me. And then one of my uncles and a lot of my family members joined onto the bandwagon. Of course, they teased me on how big I was or how ugly they perceived me to be. And one day on holiday, we were these family chalets and holidays. You sleep on the floor with your cousins and I was just waking up and I overheard one of my uncles say, "Oh, look at her, she'll amount to nothing." So the thing here is, I wasn't po positively affirmed. Let me put it that way. So I used all of those to prove people wrong. And I know that sounds stubborn, but I am quite stubborn. So what I proved to myself is, I'll turn every single one of those things around and I'll make them a success. And try me. Tell me I can't. Tell me I can't. And to date, I am on my path and journey to turning every single one of those things around, giving other people, whether it's men or women, the opportunity to follow their dreams, to know you can make wealth and not money. You can generate wealth from following your passions, that there's no qualification that should be undermined. If you want to do fine arts, if you want to do marketing, if you want to do law, if you want to do business science, it makes no difference as long as you are true to your path. So I'm on my journey to prove that, using myself as the testimony. And of course, by the grace of God, to do all of this, because I believe He's turned everything around for me.
And I think that's, there are certain people who we need to be told we can't, and that lights a fire. I'm one of those people. If you tell me I
Yes.
can't do something, can't have something, it won't work, I'll go to the ends of the earth to make sure I get it done. And
Correct.
maybe that's just how we're wired. And if it wasn't hard, we wouldn't have built the muscle to push through. And in itself,
Correct.
it's cruel and hideous and obscene to do that to a child. There's a blessings in there somewhere, and I think that's what we've got to recognize. But I think a lot of people need to hear this. Yeah, I think it's really powerful.
Of course.
So let's just clip back to organizations, because I mean, from coming from an entrepreneurial background
Yes.
and getting into the advertising industry, which is very different to normal corporate. I mean, there's a whole other culture. And I believe if you can survive one of the 90s big name advertising agencies, there's nothing you can't survive, because not only is it cutthroat and everyone pulling each other down, the demands are next level. And there are no rules in advertising. I think they were immune even
Yes.
from sort of employment equity rules in those days. So if you can do that, you can do anything.
I absolutely agree.
Exactly. And in those days, there was no such thing as corporate health care or coaching. You just,
None.
like if you didn't get on with it. But these days, I mean, it is something that has been taken a lot more seriously. I've been in the industry for 20 years, and you know, definitely for the multinationals and the bigger organizations in South Africa, they take employee wellness very seriously because it impacts the bottom line. If you've got people who are sick and they're absent, or you know, you train someone up and they, God forbid, die of a heart attack, it costs the company money. But this is about people, and people are your organization. So there are organizations that are really in tune with their employees' state of mental health and physical health. And you know, since COVID, the power of decentralized work has really come to the forefront. And I don't think it's, despite Elon Musk's need to bring everyone back into the office, I don't think that's going to happen. So in your experience, what are your opinions about how companies can work better when it comes to preventing burnout and preventing these issues? What could we do better to really help people feel supported and grow and obviously contribute?
So Nikki, the first great thing is, moving into corporate, I still work very closely with agency partners, and I've always worked closely with agency partners. And I'd like to always think of myself as the meat in between the sandwich, because I have agency experience and now I have corporate experience. So you kind of understand both sides of the world. The great thing is that even agency groups are putting a lot into their staff well-being and their mental wellness. So the advertising industry, the digital industry, the media industry is actually taking on these challenges. Are they as sophisticated as corporate at this stage? In my point of view, no. There's a lot more that agencies can do to assist their staff, assist staff burnout. But then again, agency service clients, right? And I want to talk about that. The client-agency relationship is something, or let's go, if you don't service agencies, maybe it's the consultant or the suppliers. The supplier-client relationship is probably the one that I have suffered, okay? Being an agency, I was abused by my clients. I was sworn at. I was called F's and B's. I was told to get out of the room because I was silly, stupid, and the client couldn't face me because I was a nothing. And I look back on those days, and I see that very client, and that client and I, funny enough, sit on panels together. It's quite an interesting turnaround. That abuse is something that we don't talk about, supplier and corporate relationships. It is toxic if the client is disrespectful to that, to the agency partner, because we are all human in the very end. And in those days that I was at agency, leads didn't support you. You got told to smile and do what the client wants, even if it means your health expenses or whatever. I'm going to give you a very personal example. I was pregnant with my son. I was at agency. I was told there was no maternity leave, so I'd have to pack my things, and that was 2 weeks before giving birth to him. So I said, no, it's fine, I'll work through, I'm not going to take maternity leave, could I just take 2 weeks of annual leave then, and my husband will bring him up. So just to put things into perspective, I gave birth to my son in the morning, and by 12 o'clock, I was requested to write a media strategy for a client. Funny enough, a baby client, by the way. She says, I understand. She said, I understand that you just gave birth, but I need the strategy by this afternoon. So you almost imagine, gave birth to child, hand child to husband. Child is sitting with midwife and husband to get him to drink something. And I was in my bed typing up a strategy. So I'm just giving you an example of the harsh truth of what happened. That now does not happen. At least there's respect for maternity leave. But now if you have to look at corporate, corporates have actual programs in place, not just Lyra. There are staff wellness programs. There are coaches provided to staff members, you know, if you're at that leadership level. There are also mental wellness days that even agencies provide, but it comes back to the leader of the team. And let me just call it out point blank. It's not just the organization and the culture of the organization and the values. It comes down to that specific unit and that business unit leader. It comes down to having an empathetic leader. It comes down, but a serious leader about commercial gain and value. I mean, you also are running business and running a business line, but it comes down to an empathetic leader who will not come over the boundaries of your personal time all the time. There are obviously there are issues or circumstances where if you have a crisis, that's circumstantial. But daily, every day, coming into a personal space, that is something I try and protect my team from. I would rather take it on because that is the leader that you have to be. It's servant leadership. You are serving the people that are within your team. If I can shield my team because I may have a little bit more experience to get it done quicker, that they could be with their families at that point, then I'm going to make that call to protect my team at all costs and their mental wellness. In addition, again, it's that agile and hybrid leadership. I advocate for hybrid working. Not all the time, but again, the minimum of twice a week, I advocate that my team is at home. Because, those travel hours, that's 1 hour. You could have used to cook dinner or a meal for your family. You could have gone to gym in that 1 hour, that travel time. That was always the ethics of majority of the companies that I've worked with and partnered with. What more can corporates or suppliers or just companies do is actually have those discussions, but not in open forums because no one's going to talk about their mental wellness. Almost one-on-one sessions to the team members on how they're doing. And when it comes to operationalizing, it's really to assist your team to prioritize. I think where the burnout comes from is we are focusing on the wrong outputs. And if you sit with your line manager, it's having these open conversations to go, what do you need me to focus on this week? Can we get this over the line? If anything else comes. So it's a matter of really implementation strategy and operationalizing. Then it's that aspect of allowing that open conversation with a trust circle. Again, speaking to your line manager sometimes, I do not expect my team to tell me personal circumstance. If they do want to talk about it, I told you there'll be a different level of trust that they believe that they can speak to me about. But majority don't want to come through as looking weak to the organization. And that's why I advocate having a corporate buddy. And again, be careful of how much you share with a corporate buddy because corporate gossip is a thing. It is a thing. All right. But to find a work buddy that or work bestie that I see a lot of on the gram, to have that mental wellness conversation with, and they're almost your point of reason to go, do I need to now raise it at an HR level? Do I need professional help and assistance to get over this?
So what was the point in listening to the story and how much abuse you took is absolutely staggering. So I'm just curious, at what point in your career trajectory did you realize or find the what it takes to set boundaries and to be quite firm with your boundaries? Because a lot of people battle with this.
It was on my last gig at agency, and we had a coaching session, and I got told I was very passive and I was going to move into passive aggressiveness. And I looked at my childhood, and I was always keeping quiet about how I felt. And I could see that it was causing me to become silent about my own life. So it happened on that last gig, and then I started understanding and researching not aggression, but assertiveness. And I almost became obsessed with understanding. I read books on assertiveness. I researched it on Google. And assertiveness is actually a power skill. It's not because there's a difference between aggression and assertiveness. Assertiveness will communicate in the way that we are speaking right now, but assert a boundary, assert authority, not be stepped over. Serve in a very in an assertive you're serving in an assertive manner, and that's what I do in my leadership style. And again, a little bit of passiveness and passive aggression does come back to me sometimes because sometimes a team member may not deliver, and you go, never mind, I'll just do it myself. And that's where I almost see my passive aggressive side coming in, where I need to get it overdone. I'm now impatient, and but it came when I was told I am passive. And if I'm passive, I'm not going to grow in leadership, or I'm not going to grow. So someone had to tell it to me because she started seeing the traits come out. And then I researched it and I realized, having tough conversations was the fear of my life. I hate having difficult conversations about myself, about performance, about, anything difficult. And I asked, what is the worst that could happen? I'm going to get retaliation. But My skill here was assertiveness means know your facts. And being a type one that I learned about is ultimately, I don't assert with emotion at all. I'm laying facts. I speak, and I think you've heard, I speak point one, point two, point three. I write in bullet points. I remove emotion from the conversation and I lay facts. And if anyone listening is afraid to have those assertive conversations, rest assured, you must be prepared before you have the conversation. Have your facts. If you are taking on your husband, you must have the facts that I asked you as per this to buy X from the grocery shop and you didn't. And I'm giving a very silly example. My hubby and I joke about it all the time. Hence, I give him a list
Right.
with a
Onward.
tick box. But I think the fun, but and it works, but you laid down facts. A lot more in my life, and I joke about this, a lot more arguments, if not based off emotion and erratic behavior, and would be actually solved with facts. But sometimes we are too emotional as humans, and I came to realize that perhaps being passive allowed me not to be so aggressive and emotional. Emotion and so emotional that I throw bursts out, and everyone now denotes me as calm but assertive, and I attribute that to my father's characteristics. But in some cases, he was walked over, and as I was looking back, and I was looking at the traits of my father and my mirror imaging my father, and that's the way I was starting to walk his path of being abused by then his clients, abusing his time, and I go, oh, whoa, epiphany of note, I'm mirror imaging my dad. And that came out as the epiphany when I started writing about how I was feeling. And then I had to pray on it because you don't want to mirror image the past losses and the past emotions of our parents. And that's where it all started turning for me.
That's incredible. That self-awareness. And unfortunately, a lot of people just don't have that or haven't been exposed to the possibility that self-awareness even exists. So if you're one of those people listening to this, just if you can take anything away from this conversation, it's to start asking ask yourself the hard questions. Be honest with yourself. Become aware of who's talking to you in your head. And does it damn well serve you? And you start talking or asking these questions, amazing things happen. It really is quite phenomenal how well we can or how we can heal and how we can change when we start asking these questions.
Correct. And the great things you attract after sorting out your own demons and fighting them.
Sadika, this has been a very enlightening and incredible, I think a roller coaster of a conversation is quite accurate. So I'm going to obviously put your IG links and all of that in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like our audience to know before we wrap up?
I'm a firm believer of you walk on your destiny before you attain it. And your opportunity, you have already seen it and you feel it. Your next line manager, you have already met and they're in your LinkedIn circle. The next business opportunity, you've already thought about it already, but are too scared to write the business plan. You already know what it is that you need to do to follow your God-given purpose and path. It's just time for you to do it.
Oh, I love that. That is so powerful. Thank you. And that is such a great message to put out before this year ends. So thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm just so honored and humbled for this platform.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share it with your network. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Spotify or Apple.